This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, Jason Gibbs, Joy Production Manager. It's Radiothon time. We still need Joy and we need your support. If you appreciate our free podcast service, our voice for the LGBTI community globally, and the volunteers that make our service possible, please sign up, renew your Joy membership, or make a tax-deductible donation before June 30 to keep our service possible. You may win a prize. Head to joy.org.au and click on either the Become a Member or Donate tabs to support us. If you appreciate our podcast service, let us know in the comments section when making your donation. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and on iTunes.
Well, you're back on the Escape Hour, the fabulous Escape Hour. It's Saturday afternoon. It is gorgeous outside, isn't it? What's everyone going to do this afternoon?
I'm driving to Aries Inlet.
Oh, how fabulous.
Which will be fun, staying the
nice
night.
Down there. Gorgeous.
That'll be beautiful.
What about you, Ted? Are you
going to the gym?
Well,
that'll be a little bit less gorgeous.
This man is determined to get a designer body, and can I just say, it's
he's
looking
doing
pretty
a good
hot,
job.
Isn't it? Yeah, very hot.
Absolutely.
4 weeks
good
into it, getting there.
I must ask you about your regime off air, because, you know, I'm 50 plus, and it doesn't matter what I do to my body. I've got the daddy tummy, and it's not going anywhere.
Just have something to prove. That's all you need.
Right, yeah, that'll do it.
You can read whatever you like into that.
That's your motivation. That's what you need, is you need motivation.
You do. Prove to yourself, that's what I'm saying, not anyone else.
No, exactly right. And Sarah, what are you doing?
Probably nothing.
That sounds good, nice anyway. Good.
Middle of maybe I might rake the leaves in the courtyard.
A little bit of exercise.
Yeah, a little bit of exercise. I'm going to take my beautiful girl for a walk down at the park.
That'd be good.
Little Gwenny. Yeah, that should be quite nice.
That'd
and
be nice.
We'll wander around together, and she'll
find a nice puddle.
Oh, something
to roll in. Yeah.
She always does. She's a bit like that. She's a dirty girl, just like her father. Oh, now we're here to talk about
Nepal.
How beautiful!
Yeah. And
Namaste.
And Sarah, you've just come back.
I have just come back from about 5 weeks in Nepal. Yes,
I've got a lot of questions.
Yeah, ask away. It's currently a sunny 22 degrees in Kathmandu, for all you Kathmandu fans.
It's warmer than here. That's a good thing.
That's kind of nice, isn't it?
Tell us a little about the food in Nepal. I mean, I've been to one restaurant in London, actually, and I love the food, and I've had yak milk.
Yakety yak yak yak.
Yeah, it's very salty, the yak milk. But tell us about the food a bit, you know, what the main ingredients are, you know, the style, what makes it different than Chinese food and things like that. Obviously, there's a lot of cultural differences that go into it. And is it vegetarian or meat or, you know, what is the
Well, they're
staple?
Really not meatarians. They're probably more vegetarian.
Right.
They don't eat, there's chicken and fish, not much. You won't get beef.
Right.
If you do sort of get red meat, it would probably be yak. Something like that, or buffalo.
Okay.
They have buff. They call it buff. You can get a buff steak if you want that sort of thing. But I've tried that. And if you're used to sort of grain-fed Australian beef, it's not really on a par.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's mostly they're vegetarian.
Right, okay.
And so if you're not a vegetarian, you get to explore, you know, vegetarian food, Nepali style. It's probably, there's sort of elements of it, I suppose, that are a bit similar to India, but I think it's simpler.
Sure.
I don't think it's as intrinsically kind of as spicy as Indian.
Right.
So,
less,
you know,
complexity of flavor, or
a very, very common plate is a sort of, they call it the Nepali plate. So you sort of get half a dozen things on the one plate. You might, you know, you get some rice and you'll get some, you know, nice vegetables.
Yep.
And then you'll get some dal, and then you'll get some, you know, bread or whatever to go with that. It's sort of like a Nepali plate's pretty common. A lot of people eat that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it just depends where you're eating, really, because, you know, Kathmandu's very different to once you get outside of Kathmandu.
Yeah.
So in the capital, you can pretty much get most mainstream, you know, cuisines.
Right.
Like, you can go out and have a nice Italian meal if you want to.
Okay.
You know, or you can, you know, there'd be Mexican, there'd be, you know, so it's much more international. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're paying sort of more tourist prices, but right. you know, it's all there if you want
right.
it.
Okay,
you don't necessarily have to. But a lot of people like trying the local, and they've got some interesting things going on there where you can do street food tours and things like okay. that to sort of explore the street yeah. food.
And is the street food safe to eat as far as from a hygiene or you yeah. know, bacteria point of view? I mean, that kind of thing, does that come into play, or is it relatively okay to
well, I think, you know, Nepal, pretty much you don't drink the water.
Right, okay.
It's got bugs in it that right. our systems can't cope yep. with, so you have to stick to bottled water yep. or you need a SteriPen to clean the water if you're using right. the tap water.
Okay.
So you have to use that, and that's something that would save you quite a bit of money, actually.
Right.
I mean, relative, particularly when you get out of Kathmandu, when yep. you're up in the Himalayas, instead of having to buy bottled water and yep. leaving them with recycling, having to recycle plastic bottles, a lot of people right. are starting to take the SteriPens.
Well, how does that work, Sarah?
It's an ultraviolet light. Yep. So you stick the pen into the actual bottle of water, and it emits a light. And it cleans the water.
Yeah, the light kills the bacteria.
It kills everything yeah. in the, yeah. you know, so then you can drink it quite safely. So a lot of people that I was travelling with in the Himalayas actually use that. Oh. I didn't have one with me, so I just used the bottled water. Yeah. But certainly when we got to our final destination, which was in the middle of nowhere, basically, you know, up in the mountains, yeah. Boiled water there. But, you know, very simple sorts of foods.
Yeah.
They're very famous for their momos.
Yes, yeah.
So you can get momos in all sorts. They're sort of the equivalent of, you know, they're dumplings, yeah. And you can get all sorts of different fillings yep. in your momos. A lot of them are vegetarian, but yep. you can have other things.
And can I ask too, you know, once you're in the higher altitudes, mm. do you find that you taste food differently because of the higher altitude?
Yeah, look, the altitude definitely affects appetite
yeah.
and taste.
Right.
So I was up to, managed to haul my ass up to 4,300 metres, which was the highest I've ever been.
Right. And can you feel it as well, like as you're increasing the...
Yeah, you could.
Right.
So you had to be... People, I think one of the things I sort of came back, a bit of an observation, is that I think a lot of people take the altitude sickness a bit lightly.
Mm.
But it's not about how fit you are. It's really about how your body physiologically responds right. to altitude. Yep. So you can be as fit as and you can still get altitude sickness.
Yeah.
Right. So you do have to be careful and stay across the symptoms and take some altitude yep. meds, which is what I did, and just take it slowly. Don't put yourself under too much pressure. So if you think you're right. going up, all those people that think they're going to go and do base camp and back in a week, forget it.
Yeah.
Don't even think about it. It's madness. You need to just take it very slowly and carefully.
Is part of that also acclimating at a certain altitude and then, you know, proceeding further? Is that
yeah,
part of
that's
that
right. Just, so when yeah. you get into Kathmandu, you're already at about 1,400 metres above sea
right.
level to start off with.
Yeah.
So some people actually get altitude sickness in Kathmandu, believe
right.
it or not. Right. And then when you fly out of Kathmandu, if you're going to the area where I went, which is in the what they call the Solokombu region, you fly into a little place called Lukla,
yep.
where the airport or the runway has basically been carved off the side of the Himalayan mountains. And
right.
it's supposed to be, you know, one of the world's most dangerous airports, and
I've
it is.
I've seen that on YouTube.
Have you? Yeah, it's pretty out there. But there
how
you
did
sort
you feel
of,
flying into it? Were you?
Well, I had a wonderful experience because the group that I was travelling with, there was about 30 people in our group, and the airline mucked up the flight, and we ended up having three people that couldn't get onto a flight into Lukla. And they only fly certain times into Lukla because of the weather,
yeah.
and the weather generally closes in after midday, et cetera, et cetera. So there are sort of windows where they can get people in and out. So I ended up being put on to wait for this, a helicopter with two of the other people in my group,
how wonderful.
One of which was the guide. And we actually, so I had this 1 hour helicopter flight cool. along the Himalayas, and it was just the most amazing experience. I'd never been in a helicopter before. Right. So I saw Mount Everest for the first time from the helicopter cool. flying down the Himalayas out
of your lucky day.
It yeah. was amazing.
It's incredible.
It was amazing. And I didn't have to pay a cent for it.
That's great.
So bonus. I had an amazing start to get into Lukla, yeah. but still pretty scary because yeah. literally it's in this sort of valley between all these peaks. Yeah. And when we're talking about peaks, we're talking massive peaks relative to what we're used to sure. in Australia.
Yeah.
So Lukla, I think you get to about... 2,200 something like that meters, and then from there it was all walking up to 4,300 meters. So,
right.
So the rule is walk up, sleep down.
Okay.
Once you get above about 2,500 meters, you do have to be very careful about altitude sickness. And you have to do things like drink a lot of water. You're supposed to drink about 4 litres a day.
Right.
You need to be very careful that you're watching if you're getting headaches mm-hmm. or feeling nauseous, or there's a whole range of symptoms you can monitor.
Yep.
Fortunately for me, because I was so unfit, I actually walked so slowly that I didn't get altitude sickness.
Right.
Other people in my group pushed it a bit more, and they actually did have to stay longer at Namche Bazaar to acclimatise. So
right.
a lot of people get to Namche Bazaar, which is about 3,300 metres above sea level.
Yep.
And then they spend a couple of days there to acclimatise right. before they go on to Everest Base Camp.
Right. And you had mentioned about... The medication that you can take for altitude sickness. What actually is that? Do you know what that...
Who knows? Well, no, look, it basically stops your body from... it's got to do with, liquid, water in your body and so
yeah,
forth.
Yeah.
But I don't really know medically what it does. But right. you do have a few sort of symptoms you get taking it. You get tingling after you've taken it, about half an hour after you've
right.
taken it. You get tingling in your fingertips and things like that. I think it basically forces the fluid... to do certain things
right.
in your body, so you don't get that pressure building up in your brain, which yeah. is basically one of the core, or your
yeah.
lungs.
Yes.
And because you experience shortness of breath.
Yeah.
Your feet feel very heavy when you're trying to walk. All of those sort of other symptoms.
Yeah, that's right.
Which, are exacerbated when you're actually walking, because
yes.
you're walking, what were the, how many kilometres would you do a day?
Well, we did, it took us 4 days to get to our destination.
Wow.
And we were sort of doing, depending on how fit you were, some people got in a little bit ahead of the others. But generally, I suppose we were doing, a good 5 to 6 hours, a day. But the kilometres really weren't the issue, like kilometres, it was the gradient. So
right.
between Monjo and Namche Bazaar, it's just all vertical for the
right.
whole day.
Oh.
So you just imagine doing 6 hours of climbing upstairs,
yeah.
It's and the stairs are not our size stairs,
right.
they're double height. So they've sort of crammed as many in as possible. You're high stepping. So you're really sort of flinging your leg up over right. in a lot of cases, and you're competing with yak trains, donkey, mule
okay.
trains,
right?
And all the other people that are going up into the Himalayas to go to Everest Base Camp. And when I was there, it was the start of the trekking season, so there was quite a lot of traffic going both
right.
up and back from Everest Base Camp. So you got to sort of see all the yak trains, and you actually have to give way to them. You can't. You're second, on the list, because the hierarchy is yak first,
human second,
mule first, human second, because they're the guy that's sort of in charge of the yak train or the mule train's normally at the back,
right?
And he's yelling out commands and things, which they all understand because that's all they do. They go up and down those
right.
paths,
yep.
Religiously. Yeah. So you don't actually – you have to give way, which means you go to the high side of the path so
right.
you don't get knocked off by them and fall down the Himalayas.
So the yaks are just walking right past you.
All the time.
Oh,
and they're carrying lots of bags.
Huge
and
loads.
My goodness.
Amazing animals.
And they don't get altitude
down.
Sickness, do they?
No, yeah. no, very – and the beautiful faces, can I just say? Beautiful faces
right.
with these big eyelashes and these big brown eyes.
Right. You need a bit of motivation as you're
and
trying to get up the next step.
Amazing horns. But if they turned their head, seriously, they would just
right.
send you flying
right.
down the mountain. So you do stand on the high side
yeah.
and you use your walking pole to sort of keep them off you, right. off you, which yeah. they're used to because yeah. that's what they're, you know, they've sort of, the guy that runs the train usually has a stick somewhere. Right.
So once you're on the track, you reach a point that you've finished for that day.
Mm.
And is it a camp?
No, it's little guest houses.
Guest houses. Okay.
I was going to say, Dolly, it doesn't sound like glamping to me.
No, it wasn't glamping, darling. It's very basic.
It was rough. Yeah.
It was roughing it, yeah.
I don't think I could do it.
Guest houses, but, you know, with great cozy dining rooms and great local right. food.
So the food is cooked food in
was,
the guest house?
Yes, right. It was fantastic. Oh, I had okay. no issues with anything yep. I ate at all out yep. in the Himalayas. It was all mm. beautiful home-cooked food
yep.
And lots of tea.
Right.
Tea everywhere.
It's interesting. One of the things
they have ginger tea.
Ginger tea, right? Mm, proper. Oh, good. One of the things I noticed when I was doing a bit of research on Nepal is that there's not a lot of sweet dishes.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's one sweet dish that I saw called thue, T-H-U-E. I think it's made of dry cheese and things like that. Did you experience many of the
withdrawal symptoms from chocolate cake, yeah. for example? Is that
yeah.
what you're asking?
Well, yeah, you know, the important
things.
When you
were going up the trail.
Yeah. They do other things, like they have great pancakes and things like
okay,
that.
Okay.
Right.
But yes, you're right. They're not, the dessert sort of scene wasn't really happening. But you could get a Mars bar in any of the little shops along the way if you had a craving.
$100.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was sort of along the path, there were lots of little villages that you
right.
went through
okay,
where
yeah.
you could stop and have little tea houses, they called them. And you could yeah. stop and have your tea, a biscuit, you know, your Anzac
right.
equivalent or whatever it was. And then, you know, you could buy a Mars bar or whatever.
That sounds good. Yeah.
And just sort of have a rest. You know,
yep.
between
yep.
heaving every 10 steps, because that's...
We need to go to a break, friends, but I am absolutely enjoying... This sounds like one of those lifetime achievement trips.
It
and,
does.
You know, you've got some glampers here today, so we need to hear more about your fantastic holiday, and we're going to do that in a couple of minutes.
Joy 94.9 is on air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But sometimes you can't always be with us when you want to. Here's the solution. Here's the solution. Listen to your favourite Joy 94.9 show anytime with our Joy podcast service. Our team of over 30 volunteers pick out the best bits from around 60 programs that Joy airs each week, made available to you for free download. To find a podcast of your favourite Joy show, search for us in the featured providers section within the iTunes store, or find them on the Joy website, joy.org.au. Joy Podcasts. Any show, any show, anytime, joy.org.au.
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Yes, you're listening to The Escape Hour with Ted, Sarah and Fiona. It's a gorgeous Saturday afternoon and we are loving what Sarah's got to say about Nepal. And while we're on air, this is Joy 94.9 and we need everybody to know that Radiothon is still on.
Still on, for sure.
What do you think people should do to send some money into Joy Fee? Is there any...
They can go online and they can do it online.
Yes.
And they can call up and they can do it that
yep.
way.
Yep.
There's so many different ways. You can donate, become a member.
Exactly.
There's prizes.
Oh, some gorgeous prizes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
But renew that membership or join up and become a member of our family. That would be absolutely awesome.
Yep.
Don't forget, end of financial year.
Yep, it's
a tax time.
You need to get rid of some of that cash.
Yep.
You've got to give it to the right people.
That's right.
And the right places.
We're gorgeous here. We need you. We want you to join the Joy family. Mm. Now, listen, Fiona, would you be the sort of person that would go with Sarah on one of these... non-glamping tours. Are you into that stuff?
I don't mind non-glamping. I mean, I don't mind glamping and I don't mind non-glamping.
Okay.
I don't mind roughing it. I think that's kind of fun because, you know, you appreciate everything that you have when you're in that particular situation. You've worked really hard. I'm a hiker. I love hiking. And when you get to the top or when you get to your destination, you are never more appreciative and more of that bed and more appreciative of that food that's served up to you. And that's one of the best things about doing it in that way because you're just loving everything that's coming.
Mm. Although I'd say in my case the beds were a little suboptimal. It was, but anyway, it was if you like a plank...
Right.
And with a mattress on it, which is pretty much what you got in most of the lodges. It was just a pretty solid base with a mattress. And but, you know, they are remarkably cozy. And, you know, you did sleep because you're absolutely, you know, exhausted from your day's efforts anyway. So It's what it is.
And the highlight. I mean, you're doing all this work. You're trekking up these extraordinary paths. Your end result is.
You know, I think the end result is, like, for me, it was a number of things. I think I set myself a challenge and I achieved it.
Mm-hmm.
Getting up to 4,300 metres and to the destination was pretty remarkable. You know, and just the actual physicality of the environment, the stunning mountains, and, you know, we had snow for a couple of days while we were at the retreat centre, which was just turned the whole place into a magical, you know, experience. So it was a combination of things. I mean, the walk into Namche Bazaar was personally one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And just to keep going and have the perseverance to get into Namche. I mean, some people burst into tears when they get into Namche because it's that hard.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah. I think I would do that.
Yeah. And so, you know, for me, there were moments where I felt like I really wanted to just sit on a rock and burst into tears, and I just sort of kept going.
Yeah.
And got in there, and then, you know, it was joyous to be there because you got to, you know, sharing with the group, walking with the group was very powerful for me. The sort of support and momentum was fantastic, and we were doing it partly for physical reasons but also for spiritual reasons because we were going to a particular Buddhist retreat centre. And so we were going to be in retreat for a week up there once we got there, and that was an amazing experience on a different level. So it was a combination of things, but I think going back to your point is that, you know, putting aside everything from a day-to-day perspective and actually going somewhere completely different where you're out of your comfort zone, you don't have the things that you normally have, and you've got drop toilets and, a plank bed. And I think at the retreat centre I actually uncovered my pillow, just sort of, it was actually hay stuffed into the pillow.
Right.
And it was sort of like, if you dropped it on the floor, it would make a really loud sort of brick-sounding thud.
Oh.
So I didn't actually use that. But, you know, you've got to sort of be prepared to sort of, you know, experience things differently. I mean, there were no showers up there. You know, you had to, if you wanted to wash yourself, it was sort of like a bowl of hot water.
See, that sounds like my idea of bliss. I can think of nothing better than not having to shower on the weekend.
I
know it sounds terrible, but, you know, if I've got the weekend off and I'm not going out anywhere, love to just stay in my jammies and watch a couple of...
I have a funny story to tell you. When I was in Bali, I saw a Balinese healer.
Yeah.
Not because I felt like I needed to be healed particularly, but just, you know, for fun.
Why not?
And there were various different elements, but at one point he took the ring off my finger and held it in his hand. And then he said, "I believe you don't mind not having a shower."
What?
And I was like, actually, sometimes on weekends I like not having showers.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one of the great things about going camping.
Right. And how did he know that?
He was a Balinese spiritual healer, I told you.
Okay. Well, he's got insight.
He has. I'll give you his number.
Okay.
Next time you're there.
That's right. Sarah, so what... So spiritually, you went on this Buddhist retreat.
Mm.
And did you enter the retreat with any expectations, or was it more... I need some quiet time. I need some me time. I really need some time out and learn some teachings. What was the retreat all about? And why do you think people in our age group specifically, which is the 40 plus age group, should look at doing something like that?
Well, I think taking time out from the day to day.
Yeah.
You know, not being addicted to your iPhone, your tablet, the telly, the radio, having all the emails coming in. Because there's no Wi-Fi, you know, once you get to 4,300 metres in the Buddhist retreat centre.
Mm.
Mind you, the place is very Wi-Fi'd on the way up. Most of the lodges have it, but you have to pay for it.
Mm.
And I wouldn't say it was particularly good. So it's really about taking yourself away from the day-to-day. And I think, from a Buddhist perspective, it's about reframing your sort of take on life and understanding how attached you are to things, material things, and laughing at yourself, you know, when you realise the bed's a plank and you've got to sleep on it for the week, and having a sense of humour about it and appreciating, you know, really how lucky we are that we've got everything that we need. You know, we've got roofs over our head, we've got flushing toilets, we've got meals, we've got electricity, we've got, you know, because up there the lights would just go out and you'd have, you know, a torch.
Right.
Or, and you had to have a torch to go to the toilet in the middle of the night because, you know, you were trekking out into the snow and across the, you know. Yeah. And then you were sort of juggling your walking boots, your thermals, your pants, your top, your jacket, your fleece, you know, the torch and the toilet paper while you hovered over the hole. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's a balancing act.
So it's really, you got to know yourself in a different way because you could see quite deeply how attached you were to material things.
Yeah.
And creature comforts. And I think that's one of the main things. But also, you know, taking yourself outside your physical comfort zone, like really forcing yourself to do something that you might not have, you know, giving yourself a challenge. I didn't know whether I was going to make it or not make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the end of the day, one of the takeaways that I probably had was I probably need to push myself more.
Is there an opt out?
No, well, once you got up there, once you sort of, you could have stayed in any of the little, you know, villages along the way, I suppose, if you wanted to opt out.
Yep.
It's not really an opt out. I mean, because there's only one sort of way into these places and that's on your foot, you know, on foot.
Yeah.
Or, you know, sitting on the back of a donkey. Or if you want to splash some cash, there's a number of places where you can get a helicopter up into and land at a helicopter pad, you know, in the Himalayas. So, but, you know, those things aren't cheap.
How about, you know, once you finished and you obviously had to get down, was that just as difficult as going up? Because you get that negative on your legs and everything.
Going down, definitely.
Yeah. How was that?
Yeah, well, there was actually lots of going down on the way up, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, but every time you went down, you knew you had a bad feeling in the pit of your stomach about that because you had to go back up.
Yeah.
And so you'd often get down to the river level.
Right.
And then you'd see this bridge way up, you know, and the guide would be pointing at that and you'd be like, well, it's where we've got to go. And you'd be like, "There's no, how the hell am I getting back up to that?"
Was there a lot of swearing?
And, oh, yeah, there was definitely swearing. And, you know, just sort of like making sure you had hydration salts in your water and, you know, because it was pretty, like the stairs were like full on big stairs, banks of stairs that just went forever. And you were sort of thinking, am I ever going to get to the top of this sucker? And you got your walking poles happening for support because you needed them.
Yeah.
But the coming down, yes, it has, you're quite right. It has a different sort of, a lot of people struggle with the pressure on their knees.
Yeah.
So you really need to have the walking poles going down as well to take that pressure off your knees. But it's a much quicker trip going down for obvious reasons because you're not going up.
Yep.
And also, interestingly, a lot of people get a rush, buzz from going down because suddenly the oxygen percent intake increases and you get a bit of a high.
Right.
So we actually, there were people coming down that were running.
Right.
You know, I saw like rock hoppers, you know, with their pack on. It was kind of like, okay, they're obviously on something. But then I realized what was actually going on.
Was there high on air. Oxygen?
Yeah. They were just like the oxygen after being in low oxygen environments and they were suddenly, you know, their bodies just went woo and off they went.
I like the sound of that.
That's cool.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
That's a long drum roll, isn't it?
You're
back on the Escape Hour. How fantastic.
It's great.
Dad, we've got a new member.
We do have a new member, Damien from St. Kilda East. Thank you so much for your new membership.
Woo!
Go you will St. Kilda not regret East. It.
Yes. We're loving you, Damien. Welcome to the family. We love
definitely.
You.
Definitely. Thank you.
God, I cannot believe this woman opposite us. She's she's a trekker. She's a go-getter.
She sure is. Come back transformed.
Absolutely. Yeah. What sort of prep did you have to do as far as, you know, packing your bag? I couldn't imagine what to take on a trip like this. I'd have
not
to throw
much.
Half of my suitcase out.
Well, I actually packed my pack, if that makes sense. So I took a normal case with my trekking pack in there and the things I needed for the trek just packed in with my normal kit. And then after I'd been in Kathmandu for a few days, when the group was getting ready to head off, I took out my trekking kit and just put that in my pack. I actually took very little, primarily because, A, I didn't think I'd need it, and the whole point was to go with the bare minimum and just sort of let go. But also because you've got Sherpas carrying your gear and you are limited to how much you can take. So I didn't have much. I think you were limited to 15 kilos and I would have had well under that.
It's a great exercise.
Yeah, but there were some silly things that people packed. Like, I can remember one of the people in our group took her fluffy slippers, and it was kind of like, are you serious? You really don't want the Sherpa carrying that sort of stuff. Yeah. So, yeah, I just took the basics, and I felt that was it was good because basically my bag didn't weigh anything at all.
But you need warm clothes, obviously, once you're
layers out.
Yeah.
So I had thermals, proper walking pants, proper, you know, merino socks, and very good quality walking boots. Must say they were important.
Mm-hmm. And have those walking boots worn in before you get there.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. So that was really the prep. You know, make sure you had the right equipment.
Can you imagine those blisters if you hadn't had those boots?
Did you do any prep by climbing up the 1,000 steps in the Dandenongs?
I did that, yes.
It's quite a common prep for people that are going up all the tours.
I've been down there and watched them do that.
I like how you say it's
quite a climb. The 1,000 steps is good prep, but it can also be a bit off-putting because you can go
jog up and down there.
Yeah, because you're sort of, the gazelles are going up and down. You're sort of going up and down.
And I haven't been up it.
Yeah, no. They run past you and they run back down, and it's a bit depressing while you're sort of heaving over the side of a fern gully. But
listen, one question I've got for you, which the viewers might like to or remember, is there was a huge earthquake in Nepal.
Yeah.
Now, you were there before earthquake and now post-earthquake. Yep. What's your view on Nepal now as a city?
Look, it's really fascinating because I hadn't seen it. I flew out just before the earthquake. This was the first time back, as you've said. It was a buzz. It really felt to me as if the money that had, been donated, to Nepal to help its rebuilding was really kicking in.
Oh, good.
Most of the earthquake damaged buildings had been cleared. Mm. There was some still rubble in some places, but mostly from what I could see, that had happened. And there was huge sort of infrastructure works on with the roads, putting new water pipes in.
Right.
So Kathmandu was pretty dirty and dusty because of that, and a lot of the roads were hard to navigate. So if you were taking a cab across Kathmandu, they had to be pretty creative, the drivers, and they'd be going down all the little back alleyways to get you there because a lot of the main roads were dug up and, big earth-moving equipment and huge concrete sort of pipes going in. So that was a bit of a problem. And if it rained, very muddy, like Mud City. But having said that, it had a real energy about it. And I think the other thing that's happened is there's a couple of sort of they've got on top of some of the energy things there in terms of the power outages and so forth. So the productivity of the place has lifted quite considerably.
Mm-hmm.
So, but on the temple front, Fiona, I know because you're interested in that.
Mm.
Down in the main disappointment for me was down in Durbar Square, which in my first trip had been one of the most amazing things I'd seen.
Yeah, I can imagine.
UNESCO World Heritage Site, I mean, it goes back hundreds and hundreds of years, but the very, very slow to get cracking on that. Mm. It was a really, really sad sight and not worth the money to go in. That would be my don't spend it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Some of the magic has gone. We have run out of time today.
Sarah, you have been amazing as a guest.
It's been great fun.
Love to have you back on again. We need to say goodbye. So goodbye, Fiona.
Goodbye, Russ.
Goodbye, Sarah.
Goodbye, Russ.
Farewell, Ted. Oh, thank you. We'll see you next week on Escape Hour. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.